welcome to the Comic Book Rundown.
And so what we will do here, this is what we call Chitty Chats, and it's just us talking. We will get to a point where we'll talk about your Kickstarter project, and you can promote the heck out of that. But ultimately, it's just going to be us
shooting the shit.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Perfect.
I see you're representing your Wonder Woman shirt.
Hell yeah.
Don't know if you caught the movie.
Yeah, actually, I did. I rented a movie theater, and I took 19 of my friends and family, and we went and saw it Christmas night.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Did it in style.
Yeah, heck yeah. Well, there were some issues with that. But since the first Hobbit movie, I've been seeing a movie on Christmas Eve in theaters. And I wanted to try to keep up that tradition. The last couple years, I've brought my family along, and then 2020 happened, and everything was kind of shut down. So the opportunity to rent a movie theater and be somewhat safe / in the same germ pool that I've been in for the last all of quarantine, I'm like, yeah, I'm okay with this. It was fun. I liked it. Have you got a chance to watch it yet on HBO Max?
I watched it at home. It's hard for me to get to the movies regardless. So the fact that I was on HBO Max made it very easy. And you know what? I've seen, out of all the big blockbuster movies that come out, I've seen the most people talking about it on social media, which I think helped it being at home and on movie theaters. So it definitely had the widest reach that I've seen of films.
It really did. I need to rewatch it because I'm actually going to be on another podcast doing a movie review of it tonight in like a couple hours. But that's a whole other thing. But yeah, so we are here on another episode of Chitty Chats. You don't have a can to open up this time. Oh darn!
I know.
Ha ha. You stop it. But we're here with writer Frank Martin. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing just fine. Just hanging out, chilling, relaxing.
Relaxing all cool. Shooting some b-ball.
Trying to.
Which did you? Did you ever watch the Fresh Prince documentary?
No.
Did you watch that, Frank?
No, I did not.
Oh, it is so amazing. I cried. It was good. It was beautiful. Although I was at work watching it, so I didn't get to pay
like a baby
too much attention. I have no problem crying like a baby at work.
Attaboy, I'm proud of you.
Frank, first thing we tend to ask everybody that comes on the show, what got you into comics? What got you started in comics? Not like writing, but like what's your comic book origin story?
So I was always really into comics as a kid. I think one Christmas when I was a little kid, I came downstairs. My parents just decided for some reason to have everything Spider-Man. Every gift I was going to get was Spider-Man. This was back when the animated show just came out in the 90s. So it was huge. I loved it. They bought me Spider-Man like a bed sheet set. And the sheet set was modeled after Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man series.
Oh, even better. Nice.
Well, the pillowcase was like the lizard. It was panels and stuff. I loved it. So, yeah, I was a huge Spider-Man fan, but I was casual at that point. So it would be like if I went into the drugstore back in the day, they had the spinner rack or bookstore. They didn't have like every comic, but they had a couple that you could kind of pick up.
Yeah.
So I would read like every once in a while. I would read a book. And then I got sucked into the vacuum of Marvel's big ultimate gimmick. That was meant to the black hole of the Ultimate Universe that meant to kind of cater to people like me, which was the perfect jumping on point.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, kind of at the beginning stages of the Ultimate Universe, it was like there was like nothing like it. So I was really into it, and then I transitioned over from 6-1 to the regular 616 universe from there. And it's like drug addict, man. You go to this store every Wednesday, you got to get your hit, and before you know it, your wallet. You see,
I know exactly what he's talking about. You see.
Yeah. Before you know it, you're out there selling copper pipes to pay for your comic book addiction. It's slippery slope.
Yeah. You have to
cut them into small pieces or they won't take them.
Yeah, the Ultimate line is amazing. Similar for me. I mean, I was a DC guy since I was 10. My brother was getting the Death of Superman comics, and he was putting them in a box on the shelf, and I was sneakily trying to read them. I say sneakily because at one point he just had them all in a box, and I actually organized it for him, putting it in order. And I'm pretty sure he knew after that point that I was reading him. But I was always a DC guy, and I would read Marvel here and there, nothing too big. But once Ultimate line came out, I was reading those practically week to week. And it kind of lent me into 616 as well. I'm like, okay, so I'll check out this House of M story, this Avengers disassembled thing, this Civil War.
I know it's kind of blasphemous for someone as young as myself to call that the golden era, but that was a time of really great stories.
It really was. I mean, obviously, like the 80s was great for both DC and Marvel. 90s had some hiccups.
I can't say anything because I got my start in the 90s.
So did I.
So, I mean,
but 90s had hiccups.
You know, those times when I would pick up a single issue every once in a while and I was a big Spider-Man fan, that was the entire Clone Saga, was the 90s. Every time I picked it up, I'm like, oh, there's this weird Hulk-like character named Spider-Side. I guess that's the Spider-Man guys.
Yeah, I dread the time when we have to read this Clone Saga.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
We will get there on our main show. What else?
You start talking about the 90s and all of a sudden you get flustered.
Well, dude, 90s were bad.
I like Maximum Carnage. That was badass.
That was a very good series. You know, the Ultimate Universe, in the early days of it, it had a mission statement, you know, it had a purpose. And it was very cool to see them do Ultimate versions of all those characters. I made a point, I own every single Ultimate book that they put out.
I got all the trades, yeah.
And then at some point, it just became like another universe. They lost their mission of what they were trying to do. And you could really tell in the X-Men storylines particularly. It was just like another book. It was just like it's another storyline. They didn't really stick to that mantra of trying to fit the characters and the stories into this new updated world. So it lost track a little bit. I'm a gimmick guy for some reason. I was always Marvel for years. And then when the new 52 came out, I'm like, oh, it's a perfect jumping on board to start reading DC.
Jumping on board.
Yeah.
Sorry. As much as I liked some of the new 52, it was a problem from the beginning. They kind of started to work out, and like toward the end of it, it started to actually meld together and was having some good stories. And then they had Rebirth and just fucked everything up again. Like,
I wasn't a fan of Rebirth, but I have nothing to compare it to because New 52 was my starting point for DC. And a lot of people were trashing it. And I'm like, there are some titles here that I really like reading every week at that.
They had great ones. Like the obviously Batman, the Court of the Owls is iconic now.
I was Swamp Thing. The entire Swamp Thing run was incredible for
New 52. Green Lantern was still good too. Like that. I mean, we got Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz out of that. Like the Justice League was a good run. Aquaman was great. Like there was some good stuff in there, but then we had ones like Hawk and Dove and Team Seven that were like, why? I get they're trying to bring in new readers. Obviously, you know, it worked on you. But you're right. If you compare it to the 90s, 2000s, even like the 80s with Crisis on Infinite Earth and,
as long as you're not comparing it to The Flash.
Well, don't compare it to The Flash. And yeah, those are bad.
Comics inherently have that continuity problem, you know, where at some point in time, you can't have five decades worth of stories and Spider-Man is 45 years old. It just doesn't, work out. So they need these little reboots or clean slates to kind of, even though fans, it drives us crazy. It's a necessary evil, you know?
Yeah, we still buy it. I mean, I buy almost every time they have a crossover. They got my money. So you are here today to promote your Kickstarter. The Polar Paradox. You sent me a advanced copy of it. I really, really liked it. What would you describe it as? It is a sci-fi adventure mystery about a team of elite divers going on a rescue mission under the Arctic sea ice. Care to explain a little bit more about the plot? Or about the story, I should say.
So the feel of the book, I'm trying to, without superpowers, it's that old school Fantastic Four feel to it as I try to give to it. You know, like a family, a group, a team going into uncharted territory, very similar to maybe like Lost in Space. They're going someplace that they're is brand new. They don't know what to expect, and they got danger around every corner. So they're trying to survive while accomplishing their mission. And I call it sci-fi. But when you think of sci-fi, you think of robots or cloning. You think of like hard sci-fi. This is kind of near future sci-fi. So it's very much grounded in reality. They're rescue divers. It's just because it's near future. Maybe some of their tech is a little bit more advanced. But for the most part, it's a pretty realistic story. It's a two-part story. The first part, as you read, is mainly the adventure side of it. As they dive, as they encounter all these creatures in the water. And then the paradox side of it comes in part two, when they encounter some mystery as they start diving deeper and deeper underneath Antarctica.
Yeah, I'll say the ending of that first issue, it definitely got me intrigued. I'm not gonna lie. Like I want to know what happens. And you know, you said sci-fi. I would say the colorful nature of the octopus that you have in there, that's sci-fi-ish. Like it's scary, definitely scary. But no, it's pretty good. I know you also have other books. Like I checked out your website and you've got some other comics on there, other novels that you've written. Care to pimp out anything else of those natures before we get back to the Kickstarter?
Sure. I mean, I bounce around a lot. I tend to like to write what I like to read and which spans really the gamut of everything. So I write some sci-fi, some horror, some fantasy. My last book on Kickstarter was in October for the Macabre Motel. It was kind of a Twilight Zone, weird, supernatural book about a guy. He stays at a motel and he encounters all these weird, creepy guests and he gets freaked out and he tries to leave and he gets stuck there. So that was just a one shot, and yeah, I tend to write all over the place.
That sounds actually kind of cool. I wish I was found that on Kickstarter. I'm on Kickstarter too much, honestly. But
yeah, Kickstarter is a tricky thing because they don't bang your credit card until after the campaign's over. Mm-hmm. So you're just like back, and at the end of the month, you're like, holy crap, I didn't realize I backed 17 things, and now I'm
yeah. I've been on the tirade of backing comics on Kickstarter, which I want to help out comic creators. Kickstarter is a great platform for that. But then now I have a stack of Kickstarter books that I have yet to read. So the next issue could come out. All right, well, I got to get the whole series, click.
This struggle is definitely real, yeah.
Yeah, well, and I also have too many books to begin with.
No such thing.
Always such thing. But back to your Kickstarter. What made you decide to do Kickstarter over like Indiegogo or any just promoting it like self-promotion?
You know, it's a tough thing. I've had a little bit of a journey in comics. I was with a indie publisher a couple of years ago. They were kind of a startup publisher. I was one of their first books. And this was for my book called Modern Testament. It was like an urban fantasy anthology series. So it was like angels, demons in the modern world. And I put out four volumes of it, and then the publisher closed up shop. And I'm like, I really don't know where I'm going to go from here. So it was four issues, four volumes, and each issue was three stories. And I put them all together in a trade. And I was talking to the publisher and saying, I gotta I'm going to put this out. Is everything good to go? And he goes, yeah, everything is great, man. And then the next month he sends an email to all of his creators that he was closing up shop. And I was like, it kind of left me out in the cold here. So I decided to go to Kickstarter to fund the book, and it did well. I'm in the community. I know a whole bunch of other comic creators that have been pushing me to go on Kickstarter, and it's been really pivotal to kind of allow creators like myself to fund their projects and at least get the thing made, you know, pay the production team, get it printed. And it, that just gets you to the starting point of having the thing and being able to give it to people like yourself or sell at conventions and signings and stuff like that. So as far as the difference between Kickstarter and Indiegogo, that was just what I gravitated toward because it was what other creators in my circle were using. Yeah. But for the most part, whenever I talk about the differences between the two, they're just tools. You know, it doesn't really matter which one you go to. It's about you. If you pimp yourself out enough, if you talk up your book and you cater to certain readers and they like it, they're going to go wherever it is. So yeah, the tool is only as strong as the person that's wielding it. So at the end of the day, I don't think that there's that much of a difference which one you're going to go to.
Okay. The only reason I ask that is I've known many creators I've actually talked to. We've had a couple on our show who are just mainly Kickstarter, but there was one guy who was Indiegogo, and I asked him that. He's like, why'd you go with Indiegogo over Kickstarter? He's like, that's just what the producer wanted. I have no idea. I can't handle it. It's like, good answer, I guess.
Well, you know what? That my answer to the question was the answer that I always give, but it's becoming a little bit polarized, a little bit political in a way. Kickstarter, for example, at the top of their page has the hashtag Black Lives Matter at the top. Indiegogo has been catering a little bit more to the comics gate crowd. So there has been a little bit of a divide where people will only go to one or the other.
Gotcha.
And I have noticed a lot of creators they'll run a campaign and then they'll do a post campaign sale on Indiegogo.
Yes, I've seen that too. I've had a few that have done that.
And I've kind of toyed around with the idea of doing that. At the end of the day, I could only spread myself so thin, you know, to just jump on Indiegogo and all of a sudden doing something, because I have so many projects lined up that if I extend a campaign on another site, it's just going to push everything else I have going on back. So it's tricky, you know. You got to make a lot of these decisions that can affect your slate of releases for months, if not years down the road.
Well, and Kickstarter is, or just really online, is a big way to, right now, the only way to promote yourself, because with the way the world has been, we can't do conventions as easily anymore.
Which fucking sucks.
And yeah, it does. And you can't go out and pimp yourself that way. Like, I mean, you could stand on the corner and be like, hey, read my book. You guys want this? Here, give this. But I don't think you could get a lot of sales.
I live in New York City, so there are constantly guys out there with mixtapes. Just like, you're like, yo, try my mixtape. I'm like, do you have a set of headphones? I could listen to it. He goes, no. I'm like, I don't know who you are. I'm not just
going to
pop your CD on the curb. But yeah, I should do that.
Who uses CDs anymore? Come on. Yeah. Give me a website.
So yeah, I mean, conventions are a great way to connect with people because it's personal, you know. You're mm-hmm. you're looking at their face. They can hold your book in their hands. They know that you're somebody who's willing to be on the floor to talk to real fans. Yep. And if you get 10 people on the internet, I feel it's 10 people on the internet is really as strong as connecting with one person at a convention, you know, because you have that personal connection, see your face, they're going to remember that interaction, and it goes a long way. It really does.
I wouldn't be buying your stuff, because every person I've had on here on Chitty Chats, or that we've had on here, I should say, I've back there. Well, sometimes he doesn't show up. It's just what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
I back their product because I'm seeing in their face the joy talking about it. And if I can see your reaction and I can hear your excitement for it, you're going to get me excited. That's, for me, seeing somebody and hearing their project coming out of their mouth is the biggest thing. And you're going to get me to back you every time.
It was one of the hardest things I had to learn as a creator, is that nobody's going to care about your work as much as you do. So you learn that very fast, your first convention or your first signing, when you somebody walks by and you show them your book and you're like, hey, look at my comic. Do you want to read it? And they're like, no. And they keep walking. Yeah.
Like, I'm busy. I got to go buy that rare comic.
You have to make them care. You know, they're not there to see your book about rescue divers in Antarctica. They're to see the Spider-Man and Batman. You have to make them care about it. And it's tough and it's tricky, but you know what? If they're real comic fans and they give you a shot and you care about your work, it's going to happen. You just gotta care.
Yeah. And I mean, really, that's really the best way to do it. Try and think what else.
Well, we've covered movies and comics. Haven't covered games. Is he playing games?
There you go. Got any games you play?
Nonstop. I play too many video games. Really, my kids are downstairs right now playing Lego Batman 3.
Nice.
The space one.
Yep.
Which Brainiac comes. And you know what? I had to take a picture because I think Geoff Johns is like a secret character in that game. Like some of the creators are, you can unlock them.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
I haven't.
I was like, that. Those are my comic writer goals, to be in a Lego game.
I have not played Lego Batman 3, I think, since it came out. I've got it over there somewhere.
Right now,
when you hopped on, we were in the middle of a conversation. What were we talking about?
We were talking about different games and how how I can play multiple games at the same time, but you can only play one game at a time.
I have to play start to finish. I can't just play.
That's me. I don't play multiple games at a time. My son does that. So he wanted for his for the holidays, he got a GameStop gift card and he got Zelda, the new one. Not the only, it's old, but Breath of the Wild.
Dude.
And I'm like, this is a very long game. Are you going to be able to play it? He goes, yeah. So like 4 hours in, he goes, I want to play Super Mario Odyssey. I'm like, no, you can't. Stick with it.
To be fair, I mean, Breath of the Wild is long. And it's really more side questy than anything else.
It drives me crazy because he bounces around from games all the time. I'm a huge Assassin's Creed guy, so I jumped on Valhalla as soon as it came out. And I'm all disappointed because it's like a 100-plus-hour game, and I did everything I could possibly do. I'm like, I can't do anything else. I got all the achievements. I finished all the quests. I'm like, I just got to wait for the DLC or something.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah, I was saying earlier, Last of Us 2, when that came out, I was playing – my girlfriend got that for me for my birthday. And just through my first playthrough, I had, I think – 13 out of the 18 trophies. So I'm just like, well, hell, I'll just play it again and just platinum it. And oh, dude, I love that game. Such a great game.
Platinum game makes you feel good.
It really does.
I passed on Last of Us 2. Well, I don't. It's on PS4, right? I don't even own a PS4.
Correct. Yeah. So and I don't have an Xbox. So
I wasn't interested. I didn't like the first one.
Okay.
I didn't like it. It's just I heard. So many people talk it up that when I played it, it didn't really hit that.
Gotcha.
It didn't hit that mark. I'm a big story guy. I like story in video games. It was the atmosphere of playing. It was very good playing that post-apocalyptic trying to survive. But I feel like I've seen this story before, you know, I felt like I've seen, oh my God, the girl's the cure. I got to get her across the country and avoid the zombies. I'm like, I've definitely seen this.
It's happened a few different times.
Yes.
Yeah, either in movies or games or
but no, I'm a big what's the developer? Naughty Dog?
Yep.
Is that what they're called?
Uncharted.
Uncharted is incredible. I think they've made something else that I really like.
Crash Bandicoot, fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah. So they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they do. Yes, they do.
And then the new Uncharted movie that's going to come out with
Tom Holland. I'm looking forward to that.
He does not. When I saw the picture of him, I'm like, he does not look like he looks a little young to be playing Nathan Drake.
But it's also a good thing because we can at least maybe get him for 3 to 4 movies. Versus, I would have loved to have had Nathan Fillion.
I mean, that's a no brainer.
If they would have done it, you know, 10 years ago.
Exactly. That's the big thing. He's too old now. He can't jump around like he used to. He's no Mal.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, I think that's everything.
That's usually what we cover.
Yeah, we've talked about everything in existence of the world. I don't think
what's important to our world.
Everything
yeah.
in existence of the nerd.
Yeah. Again, Frank, thank you for coming on. Go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you, and then where they can find your Kickstarter. We'll have the links and everything in our show notes. I'll have it on my Instagram. But go ahead and tell all the listeners where they can get a hold of you.
I'm pretty easy. I'm Frank the Writer. So everything, my website is franktherewriter.com. All my social media handles, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Frank the Writer for all of them. The book is called The Polar Paradox, and I'm going to – if you just find me somewhere on social media, you'll see I'll be posting about it like crazy. So if you find me somewhere there, it'll be hard to miss it. So definitely awesome. Give it a
– Yeah, I definitely – I backed it day one, and I'm looking forward to getting it and then getting the second book. So it'll be great.
Well, I'm actually lettering the second book now, so – I don't like to wait too long. A lot of people they put one book on Kickstarter and then they wait a year because I know comics takes forever. I like to try to leave it out somewhere in a decent release schedule. So I think the second one will be up in the summertime.
Ooh, perfect. Oh. Awesome. Love that. All right. Well,
hey, it was nice talking to you.
Yeah.
Nice talking to you too, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. Have a good one.